Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mundus.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show. On Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome to the show. Number 1030.
Goodbye, baby. Yes, I'm going. Yes, I'm going.
Over the weekend, you probably heard Donald Trump called me old. I said, why would he call me old? I would never call him crazy and orange. Wait, that's not exactly how it went down. That's probably confusing the stories. Busy weekend, and Ryan Nobles will be on to talk about it later from CNN. Dan Hampton will be on. I don't know if you caught the fact that the Bears lost to the Packers. Oh, you did? In really rather spectacularly inept fashion.
That's a good way to put it, Steve.
In all your years of calling games, have you seen, because the rules change over the years in different ways, have you seen the pylon causes a touchback and someone challenges it and loses the ball?
Have you ever seen that? I've seen a pylon cause a touchback. I've never seen someone challenge it and then end up losing the ball as a result of the challenge.
Let me go live to Mike Jacobson, who interviewed the pylon exclusively last night. We'll be playing back Mike's interview with the pylon later this morning. Mike, have you ever seen, all your years of following sports, have you ever seen the pylon cause a fumble, causing a challenge, causing a loss of the ball?
Still pretty wet out here, Steve, at Soldier Field. Just want to let you know, I got the poncho still going. It's pretty cold. No, I haven't. And I was actually at the game. I'm reporting live right now, but I was actually at the game yesterday, right in front of when that play happened. I have never seen anything like that.
So you were on the field? You were on the pylon?
I was on the pylon. Yep. Okay.
Look, if you caught any of Hamp, OB, and Kaz yesterday with your little friend Mark Carmen, it was 3 hours of yelling. It sort of reminded me of Thanksgivings in my youth. And I don't doubt that it will change much this morning. Ditka will be on later as well. That'd be Coach Ditka, in case you're wondering which one. Paul Conrad's on this morning. Paul hadn't been on in a while. And then Elise Link later on whether or not charities are going to get whacked by the tax code if it goes through. As planned, we're going to get to the, what do we call this thing? Oh, yeah, the top six at six. But let's do traffic here. Mary, I thought there was supposed to be debilitating fog this morning.
I had fog. Didn't you have any fog?
No, it's really not a big deal at all.
No, it's quite foggy in the western burbs.
I don't know about north, but coming in from the west, it was no big deal.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of accidents, so maybe that is the case. Traffic sponsored.
You're just saying that because it's traffic.
No.
Oh, you're saying it because it's true. All right, here are the facts.
And we had reports of black ice earlier, too, which is really creepy.
Listen, floor it. You'll get to work faster.
Oh, great idea, Steve. Thanks.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60-Minute Man.
Item number one, it's been 2 months since Hurricane Maria. Meanwhile, much of the island of Puerto Rico's population now has PTSD, public health officials say. They have heart palpitations, sweating, catastrophic thoughts. They think, I'm going to drown, I'm going to die, I'm going to lose everything. Annabelle Laval will be on tomorrow from Puerto Rico at 6:20 to address what state the island is actually in. Next. President's about at the end of his 12-day trip to Asia. You know, it was so close to not being a disaster. Mm. And then this weekend, he sort of blew it all up. We'll talk about that later in the show. He did noted his great relationship with President Rodrigo Duterte, of the Philippines. Yesterday, he denounced his critics and haters and fools investigating his ties to Russia. And North Korea's leader, who he said he would never call short and fat, and has really tried hard to be his friend.
Did you see that press conference or that when they had sit down with Duterte? When he's wearing like a leather coat, pants, yeah. And then those motorcycle boots.
Duterte compared himself to Hitler at one point and said he would like to kill the exterminate, extinguish, I forgot the word he used, the 3 million drug users in the Philippines.
Yeah.
I think anybody that compares himself to Hitler, you pretty much got to distance yourself from them. But hey. Who am I to judge? That's me. Next. Terrible earthquake. Not that they have a good kind, but along the border of Iraq and Iran, 7.2 quake, hundreds if not thousands dead. They believe they can confirm the term hundreds dead this morning and thousands injured. There'll be more news on that throughout the day. And at least five companies have said they're done with Sean Hannity, including Keurig, the coffee maker people. Realtor.com, 23andMe, Nature's Bounty. I'm missing one. But anyway, you get the idea. This is all related to the fact that they feel that Sean Hannity was way too supportive of Roy Moore, the embattled Alabama Senate candidate who apparently had a thing for teenage girls and appears to have sexually abused a 14-year-old girl.
Boy, and Roy Moore is not showing any signs of backing down, nothing.
Well, here's the thing. He's pulling the Trump move. The Trump move is, if I accuse you of something, you attack me. Okay, again, there's no upside for any of these women to come forward. Zero upside. The Washington Post, because so many people over the weekend that I heard defending Roy Moore, when they're doing man on the street stuff in Alabama, they admitted they hadn't read the Washington Post story. This is so typical of the problem we have now. Read the story. After you read the story, if you still feel the same way, okay. But you can't just say it's all made up because you think it's all made up.
Right, or because to smear the campaign. Give me a break. Why would all of these women... There was a very powerful soundbite over the weekend from one of the women, and she said, "How dare you say I'm lying?" She said, "You want proof? My body is proof."
Well, and how about the fact that at least four, if not all five of the women are committed Republicans?
Right.
They're not out there supporting Democrats. The whole political argument is BS. The same way that people go, this needs more proof and it needs more due process. This isn't a court of law. This is politics. You don't get due process in politics. Mm-hmm. So Roy Moore is still in the hot seat today, and he should be. Next. The sexual harassment stories continue, and now politics from state houses from California to Florida with accusations that probably were ignored for years and years and years, the same reason they were ignored in Illinois and other places, but aggressive responses being stepped up now, including in Illinois. But the guy who in Illinois in the state house, what's his name? I forgot his name. Just got pulled from the committee position last week.
With the allegations about it. Yeah.
He's still there.
Silverstein.
Yeah, he's still there.
Ira.
Yeah. Ira.
Yeah.
Again, it's politics. You don't get due process. No. Don't confuse these two. This is not a court of law. This is a court of public opinion.
Can I add something?
And whether or not you're going to vote for him.
Real quick, I know you're talking state house, but the Hollywood fallout over the weekend with George Takei and Richard Dreyfuss saying that they are not guilty of the allegations of sexual harassment against them. And Gal Gadot, good for her, saying that she's not going to sign on to part two of Wonder Woman unless Brett Ratner is completely out of the picture.
And Brett Ratner had a long history of thinking it was cool to minimize women. I agree with you. Good for her. Yeah, and she's got the kind of power to do that.
Right.
Now, they also have the power to say, okay, then we'll find another Wonder Woman. But based on how much money the first one made, I think Brett Ratner's going to lose that argument. Yeah. Next. I don't know if you heard. The Bears lost. Bears lost yesterday. We will go over this in great detail with Hamp and Coach Ditka later. And I don't think in this current environment, and one of the great and maybe the more, self-defeating traits of the Halas family at the top of the Bears mountain is that they don't just throw people out. They don't fire people on a whim. So John Fox, I don't think John Fox is getting fired today. I don't think John Fox is getting fired for the rest of the season.
I don't know.
Are you hearing
we thought that. Well, I mean,
are your people telling you things?
No, not necessarily. But I think you have to remember as recently as a few years ago when Mark Trestman was here for, two seasons? And that did seem at the time.
But he was fired at the end of the year, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I don't think
that's
he's
what
gonna,
I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. You know no, what? There's
I'm
not
saying
really.
Fox, that's what I'm talking about today. Fox, I think, is gone at the end of the year.
But, yeah. But, okay. I misunderstood you. Yeah. But there's really, if you look at coaching changes in football, maybe more than any other sport, you fire a coach during the season, there's no immediate payoff from it, because
right.
all it does is throw your program into even further chaos, mm-hmm. because you know now all of a sudden everything's changing in midstream, unless you promote a coordinator, something like that,
which I'm sure they would probably do.
Yeah, but I don't see that happening.
I think it'll happen at the end of the year. I don't think it'll happen before the end of the year.
Correct.
And nice win Saturday. I'm talking about Northwestern now.
It was a good win. Yeah. They've won five in a row.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very strong. How about how are we doing in hoops?
1-0, and they played tonight against St. Peter's, and we'll have that at 6:45 right here.
Who's calling that? You or Andrea?
Actually, I think that's going to be me tonight.
Okay.
It's one of my
games.
I'll
be your backup, Dave, in case your voice is hoarse from Saturday.
Top six brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Man at 6:27. We're back with a big story, which is what today?
It's a combination. There were a series of carjackings in Chicago overnight. They all might be related. We're talking almost a dozen.
Seriously.
Yep, and we're all
one gang working together.
Possibly, that's what they're thinking. Huh. So just be careful out there. And also, we're going to talk. We're going to give you an update on the Gary shooting.
Okay, coming up 6:27 at 7:20 WGN.
I have edema on my thigh, pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now.
Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine.
I've got a stomach pain that's low, fungus on my toe, and I need you now.
Making people better by making medicine better.
He's from Central DuPage Hospital.
And Northwestern Medicine.
Call Dr. Moose right now.
I was at the Hawks game, Doc, last night. Good morning, by the way.
Good morning.
I was at the Hawks game last night with friends, including Jim Roth, great guy. And Jim is a huge fan of yours and wanted you to know how much he enjoys this particular segment.
Well, tell Jim thank you very much. I appreciate that, and hopefully I make sense every other Monday.
And then there's a creep, Larry Wirt, that runs this company who wants to tell me all the time how this is the favorite segment of the week and about the only thing he listens to on the show.
Yeah, I was supposed to touch base with Larry this weekend and did not, so I need to give him a call.
Yeah, you're his little pet.
Yeah.
All right, so there may be an opportunity this week, depending on your schedule, if you could come back to talk a little bit about Alzheimer's again. Over the weekend, Bill Gates committed $50 million of his own dollars to the fight against Alzheimer's. There's just some good news and some bad news related to Alzheimer's and some amazing statistics. And it's all stuff Doc's brought up before, but I think it might be time for a return to that topic at some point. But today, I'm going to throw some names at you. And Andre and Dave, you can see if you can tell, because I know the answer here. But you guys can see if you know the answer. Charles Dickens, Neil Young, Teddy Roosevelt, Prince, Danny Glover, Edgar Allan Poe. What do they all have in common, Dave? I mean, they're all Wildcat fans, obviously, but what do they all have in common?
Prince, Edgar Allan Poe.
Teddy Roosevelt, Neil Young, Charles Dickens.
Go Cats.
I've got to think it's got some sort of health.
Because Doc's on the phone.
Yes.
Of course it's got something to do with health.
Well
done, Kreskin.
I'm trying to be deductive here.
Have you seen the answer?
I have seen the answer. Well, but you know what, though? I won't say I was surprised that all of the people that you mentioned suffered from this.
Doc, what do they have?
They all suffered or are suffering from epilepsy.
How about that?
Well, if you mentioned my wife, then I would have gotten it.
Your wife deals with this, too? Oh, I did not know that. That's rather remarkable, but that right off the top, Doc, that just shows people that anybody can get it, and it doesn't matter who you are. Epilepsy doesn't care.
Yeah, you know, I think it's sometimes important that we use celebrities, and Dave, I apologize. I should have put your wife on this list.
I think she'll be okay with it, Doc, but
okay,
thanks.
Good. But yeah, we need to eliminate some of that stigma that often follows some diseases, whether it's depression or, you know, even Alzheimer's. And here we talk about epilepsy, and anybody can get it. And that's what we have to realize, and that it's this disease process, and let's understand it before we start looking at people with epilepsy and feel differently.
So this is Epilepsy Awareness Month, and some people might grow tedious with all the theme months we have for different things. But the reason they have them is because it is a way to get media and other folks to focus on it for at least a 30-day period. So what are some of the myths that are out there?
Well, you know, I think what probably one of the biggest myths is, oh my gosh, this person, if I get too close to someone having a seizure, I can get contagious. Or, boy, they have epilepsy, therefore they cannot do this job. They're not smart. They're not talented. And they're very restricted in what they can do. And we have to realize that, you know, these are like people, you, walking down the street, you can't tell, look at somebody and say, oh, that person has high blood pressure, that person has diabetes, that person has epilepsy. They are totally normal individuals who just happen to have a portion of their brain that sometimes will short circuit and cause them to have a seizure.
And of course, the rest of us, just human nature now, the rest of us think, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do if somebody seizures in front of me. I'm sure you hear that all the time.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you know, when we talk about, like you said, the topic of the month kind of sometimes, it's important for people, one, to understand the disease, two, to understand if they were put in the position of someone doing something, what can they do safely and what can they do to help? And then we like to talk about what's new and exciting as far as the treatment of it. So I think individuals, hopefully, after hearing this, will have a better understanding of what goes on with epilepsy.
All right, so if somebody seizures and they fall in front of you,
yep,
friend, stranger, whatever, what's our role?
You know, people used to always think, okay, wait, I got to make sure that they don't swallow their tongue.
Mm-hmm.
And it's impossible to swallow your tongue. You cannot swallow your tongue. So don't worry about that portion of it. Probably the biggest thing that you can do is try to keep them as safe as possible. Don't try to restrain them. Don't try to stop the seizure. Those cause dislocations, broken bones. Seizing is okay. Probably the most important thing is protect their head. Turn them on their side, so in case if they happen to throw up, it doesn't end up in their lungs. Turn them on their side and protect their head. And then move anything around that they could kick or that they could run into, move that away from them. So the important thing is allowing the seizure to occur, but just try to protect them as much as you can.
All right, so after the seizure ends, what are they experiencing and what do we need to be doing then?
Yeah, after a seizure, there's a period of time called the post-ictal phase, and that's after someone comes out of the seizure. And it's important to stay with them during that time. They'll look dazed. They'll look confused. Many of them will come out and pretty much know that they just had a seizure because they've had them in the past. But just stay with them and be concerned with them until someone comes or until they get to a point where they can get up and move safely. Often paramedics will come at times like this. But to be honest with you, a lot of these people who have had seizures in the past know exactly what to do. And the other thing is, you know, unfortunately, sometimes when people have seizures, they become incontinent and lose their urine. This can be very embarrassing. So try to make it at least as comfortable as we can for the individual.
Should you automatically call a doctor when somebody comes out of a seizure or, you know, does it depend on the situation?
Well, it probably depends on the situation, but to be honest with you, if you don't know the individual, it's always good to have experts there because you don't know what caused that seizure. Seizures can be caused by brain tumors. Seizures can be caused by other things. They can be caused by drugs. So if you don't know the individual and they don't know that they have a seizure history, it's always good to get that individual checked out. This may be the first seizure that they've ever had, so having them seen professionally is a good idea.
1 in 10 adults will have a seizure at some point in their life. That's pretty amazing. And epilepsy means you have two or more unprovoked seizures in your life. That's really as simple as that.
Yeah, it is. You know, and when we look at the general population overall, now a lot of those, when we say 1 in 10 will, a lot of those are going to have seizures as they were a child, something called a febrile seizure, and then they won't have another one. But 1 in 26 are going to go on to have recurring seizures. So this is not an uncommon disease. All you people are driving down the Eisenhower or driving down any of the highways right now, you're surrounded by 26 cars. Chances are that, you know, people that you know have had a seizure disorder, and people that you probably know that you didn't even know had it have a seizure disorder.
Is there an age for epilepsy where it's most prevalent?
No, we can get it, you know, as early as 3 months. You can get it all the way up until, you know, your 60s or 70s. So it can happen to any of us at any time. You know, we do have a higher incidence of children who have it. And fortunately, some of those will, I hate to say, use the word grow out of it, but some do grow out of it and won't have another seizure. But for the most part, we can't cure this. We can't give you a medicine and say, here, take this for 10 days and you're cured. But we do have medications, obviously, that can help us control it.
We'll get deeper into this after traffic, but Andrea, one more before we hit traffic.
Is there something like a pacemaker now, Doc, for epilepsy patients, like a neurotransmitter, something like that?
Exactly. It's probably one of the newer, cooler things that are being done. And not that they're not being done all over, but Northwestern happens to do them as well. And it's something called a responsive neurotransmitter. And it's just like a pacemaker. So we can find some individuals where we can identify that the activity is going to occur now and it's going to cause a seizure, because a seizure is essentially a short circuit in a portion of the brain. And in those individuals where we can identify exactly where the seizure is coming from, we're able to put essentially a wire in there and override that. So when we see, the body sees that it's happening, it knows it, boom, the pacemaker fires and it stops the seizure from happening. Very, very cool.
More with Dr. Kevin Most in a moment. Dr. Kevin Most, making people better by making medicine better. That's what Northwestern Medicine does. And Doc is here on behalf of the fine people at Northwestern Medicine, mostly the nurses. We like the nurses best because they do all the hard work. Epilepsy Foundation of Greater Chicago, we should support them all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when we talk about the awareness and making sure that people are aware, but we really need to know that you have a lot of local resources here. Kurt Florian and his team at the Epilepsy Foundation of Chicago is great. You know, here's a parent or a child or an individual who has a seizure and they go, where do I turn? And here, you know, they have great resources. They're there helping lead research. You know, they're the ones that are saying, hey, give us some funding so we can make sure it gets into the hands of the right people for funding. But also, how do I deal with it? What do I need to do in my home? What do I need to do? What's the best treatment options? Who are the best doctors? So, you know, just Google Epilepsy Foundation of Chicago. And like I said, Kurt Florian's a great leader in that group. So he's really doing some great work.
Andrea was talking about this, what amounts to a pacemaker, but there's other things going on. What are some of the other breakthroughs?
Yeah, you know, there's, you know, like I said earlier, you know, we can't cure this, but when we start to look at some of the other surgical options, it's kind of amazing when we think about it. You know, the brain is so complex. It allows us to do so many things, it allows us to take a golf swing, allows us to do math, allows us to do all these things. And if we can find a computer
on top of your shoulders, that's what it is.
Yeah. So think about your whole brain and trying to find this one tiny small area that causes the seizure. But when we can, the other cool thing that we're doing now surgically is something called using a laser, actually, and it's a laser called NeuroBlate. And what we do is we put a small hole in the skull, and then under MRI or CAT scan guidance, we take this laser and put it into the area where we know the seizure is coming from, and we heat it up and we burn it or ablate that area to stop the seizure from happening.
So it's a rewiring.
It's kind of a rewiring, or it's a burning out, a soldering of the area that was firing wrong. But for these individuals, you're talking about a very tiny hole in the skull. You're talking about a very fine laser that is put in there, and then it is turned on when it's in the right area, does minimal to no damage to the healthy tissue, takes care of that tissue, and that's an individual that was going to be on medicines for the rest of their life that no longer need to be on medication.
Can you do anything with nutrition or diet?
Yeah, there is. You know, some of the patients who don't do well with just medication, they've found that putting them on a ketogenic diet will actually help the medication work a little bit better and can help slow down the activity of the seizures. So the diet's not going to make it go away, but it certainly can help. That being said, you know, people go, oh, ketogenic diet, that's the Atkins diet. I'm going to put my child on that. You need to do it in a very careful way. Often we'll put people in the hospital, actually, for a few days as we get them on this diet, because it's a very strict diet and really should be really watched and taken over by your physician.
Melissa McCarthy supposedly just did this ketogenic diet thing and lost a bunch of weight. All right, so what do you want to say to parents?
Well, you know, a couple things. One is, it's not the end of the world if your child has a seizure. Like I said, you know, look at the people here. You know, we had presidents who have had seizures. We have great actors. We have brilliant people who have had seizures. So don't get down. Don't get depressed. Two, the other thing is probably one of the most common forms of seizure we see are what we call febrile seizures. And that's when a young baby, a young child, 3 months up to 5 years, will get a viral illness, will get an ear infection, will get a high temperature and have a seizure. Don't be concerned about that. Certainly, we take care of that. You're going to do the exact same thing we do with adults. Turn them on their side. Let them have the seizure. If it's their first one, make sure you get them into the doctor. But those are not going to, you're not, oh, my child has epilepsy. No, don't worry about it. Your child's seizure was because of this high fever. And really the message there to parents is when you start to see your child has a low-grade fever or starts to have a fever with a cold, treat it. Give them Tylenol. Give them Motrin to keep that fever down to eliminate the possibility of a seizure.
We'll talk Alzheimer's later this week if you have time.
You got it, man.
I appreciate it. Thank you. And all the notes that Doc does, and he does the better notes than I've ever seen. I mean, ever. We post them all. Jake, where do we put the notes? Like, when we talk to Doc, where do those notes go after?
That would be WGNradio.com.
All right. Can we post a link to them on my Twitter page, at Cochran Show?
We sure can.
How about my Facebook page, Steve Cochran Show?
You got it.
Could we mail them to people?
We'll put it on your Snapchat, too.
Could we fax them out, possibly?
I'm actually using a typewriter to type it up right now.
Can we make copies and have Dave drop them off after the show?
I have a bunch in my desk.
Oh, you do?
Go yes.
Perfect.
I keep them all.
7 o'clock, back with the news next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
We're talking John Fox, the bumbling, dumbling fool, actually challenged to play.
Gets greedy.
That decide, oh, I want a touchdown, even though it'll be first and goal on the 1 yard line.
Gets nobody a gets a pass today.
But here's
nobody.
The
deal. Not one. Don't throw the red flag.
You're on the bumble.
Right. Line. Mark, it's a no-brainer.
Right.
You got a yard to go with four downs, and you're going to lose something, that something might happen.
No question.
And you have to know this as a head coach.
All I can say is the great Pete Mancini of Parrot Petroleum, you've got a big job on your hands, Pete. Find a lubricant that can dislodge this bumbling fox. Get him out of here.
Sunshine, rainbows, oh, man. I started to think those guys don't like me. It's 7:13. The Hall of Famer, Dan Hampton. Yesterday, right after the pylon play, I tweeted out, you better listen to the post game today, provided Hamp, OB, and Cause live to the post game. I wasn't sure you guys were going to make it through the second half.
It was touch and go for a little while. It's funny that you obviously had that clip because I was just sitting here thinking, you know, if I was really smart, I would come up with the John Fox comic book of coaching, and this chapter would be called The Pylon Pug. and it's another chapter of a crippling, embarrassing loss in, you know, traditional fashion. And the thing that really gets me is, you know, it's such a contrast. You know, I kind of understand how the other teams felt because back when we played, we were so good. You know, we expect to win all the time. And now, you know, finally we get a chance to play the Packers without their greatest player. And the bungler does it again. It's just
– Well, you know, you just hit on a really important distinction. In the heyday of the Bears, you expected a win. Now we're surprised by a win. We were surprised by two in a row. We were surprised by the opportunity to get the three. And we're very disappointed, and rightfully so as Bears fans, that they couldn't get it done yesterday. But let me ask you about that particular play. And for people getting up this morning, maybe they missed the game, whatever. You got a back that's stretching out, trying to get the ball across the goal line, reaches for the pylon, and loses control of the ball. The call on the field is that the ball goes out of bounds and it's first and goal on the one. That's when the challenge flag comes out. The review then determines he didn't have control of the ball. He'd actually fumbled it into the end zone. Not only is it not a touchdown, it's now a touchback, and Green Bay takes over the ball. Here's the thing. You can give Fox all the benefit of the doubt in the world. Say the call came from upstairs. He's got to have the buck stop here. But the fact is, you lose a timeout. Yeah, it's the end of the half. You lose a timeout. There's risk to a challenge, and you do have first and goal. Somewhere in that coaching staff, there's got to be a collective viewpoint that a challenge isn't worth it then, even if you're not sure in real time that it was a fumble into the end zone, even if you're not sure that it could be a problem. That's the time to be cautious because you've got four other opportunities. Am I wrong about that, Amp?
See, that is this, the most salient point about this that everyone is missing. The head coach, you've got offensive coordinator calling play. You got to give it, that's minutia. This call is your job. Time management, possession calls, challenge calls, those are your domain. After the game, Fox admitted, if you go back and listen to the tape, he admitted they never thought of the possible consequences. That is on him. Now, whether, you know, every receiver runs to the sideline, tells you he caught it. You know, like a little kid saying, I didn't drop the ice cream. All I'm saying is, you as a head coach, that's why you get paid $5 million to make decisions like this. And he admitted after the game he never thought of the possible consequences. Rather than zip it, no matter what anyone was saying, and know the call on the field was out of bounds on the two, you've got four downs to punch it in with the strongest back in the NFC. But no, obviously trying to, you know, be, you know, the Wizard of Oz here, he wants to, you know, think outside the box, challenge it, because, you know, the running back, and, you know, to Benny Cunningham's credit, who I like a lot, you know, he was trying to make a play. And after the game, he said, hey, after I watched the review, I understood that I didn't score and that I did lose the ball and the officials made the right call.
Yeah, how about that?
Now, why didn't someone with a brain be able to tell Fox that without him becoming emotional, throwing the flag, challenging it, and again, never thinking of the possible consequences? But, you know, when you look at the pantheon of all of his bungles, you know, this is the challenge call that will live in infamy. We will never forget it. Never.
Yeah, you know this is going to be called the pylon game. This is the pylon game.
But more than that, but here's my question. How low do we have to go to fire this guy? I mean, forget the pylon, forget the fumble. It's another loss. When you're a favorite, he has only been deemed the head coach of the Bears as a favorite six times in his, you know, reign of terror of 41 games. Oh, and all six he's lost. Not, you know, forget the cover this, but he's lost. How low do we have to go? Now, you know, we go from being horrified to disgusted to embarrassed. What has to happen before George McKeskey says, I've seen enough, I can no longer tolerate it? Now, you know, there were some good things yesterday, but overall, this is a team that, to me, goes out and looks for ways to lose games. There's a kid named Sowell, a backup offensive guard, that at the end of the game, at the end of the first half on a field goal, he gets bull rushed by a defensive back and gets pushed over backwards. Oh, rather than just, hey, that's part of the game, get up and go to the locker room, he gets up trying to be big shot and shoves a defensive back and gets a 15-yard penalty. Nobody was thinking anything about it. But what happened? They enforced it on the opening kickoff of the second half, where they were able to get a return to our 45, where they went ahead and punched it down and scored. And they should have scored a touchdown. They had third and one, but they refused to, you know, run the ball. They tried to throw it with Hundley. But anyway, they scored. But the point is that it's a microcosm of how stupid this team is at all these different levels.
Yeah, it's amazing. It really, and more with Hamp in a second, and it'll jump in with him too, because it's amazing on every level how there's failures. Yesterday was a game that not only they should have won, they really had to win. You know, it's a lottery win to have Aaron Rodgers not playing and every other injury that Packers had. And the Bears, frankly, were never in it.
You know, it's all a problem.
Brought to you by ChevyDriveChicago.com. It's Hall of Famer Dan Hampton. Dave, say hi to Hamp.
Hey, Hamp, good morning. I guess I wasn't one of those who was as apoplectic about the replay challenge, because I thought the bigger issue yesterday was was looking at the Bears coming off a bye week, favored, playing at home against a team that had lost three in a row, was out obviously without some key guys, including their quarterback. This is a chance, and we talked about it Friday. This is a game you had to have, and I just never felt that the Bears came out right from the first drive by Green Bay. The Bears were ready to play. I mean, you said there were some good things out there, and I thought one of the things was, I'm not going to pin this on Mitch Trubisky. I thought, for the most part, I thought under the circumstances, with the Bears unable to run the football, I thought he played pretty well. What'd you think?
Absolutely. And, you know, I just want to know one thing. You know, everybody calls him the kid, and he's, you know, green rookie. How long till DCS steps in and takes him away from Fox? That's all I want to know.
So you want DCFS to come by and pick up Trubisky and return him to his parents?
I mean, how much can he get up? Look, here's two things about this. You know, I said on Fox last night, we played an inferior football team, yet they were coached by a superior coaching staff. And I could go back and diagram and illustrate how the Packer coaches did a lot of stuff that really was effective on both sides of the ball. But, you know, Mitch Trubisky can do it all by himself. You know, there were flashes here and there, but ultimately, most of the game, in first, second down, we were running, trying to run the ball against an 8 and 9 man front. And it, at some point, you have to be able to turn the keys over to the quarterback to be able to read that check and go and be able to throw over the top of it, make enough plays to back them off. Because, I mean, it's numerically, it's a mismatch. You cannot run against those fronts. Don't have enough bodies to block. But Trubisky, you know, there were flashes by Dontrell Inman, the young receiver, mm-hmm. had some catches. You know, there was a beautiful pass, which unbelievably Josh Bellamy caught for a touchdown. you know, Shaheen had a couple of plays. There were some good stuff. But overall, this offense is herky-jerky. It never gets any rhythm. If you were to watch the New England Patriots, when they go down the field, there is a rhythm and sequencing of what they do on offense. One play sets up the next and so forth. Unfortunately, we don't have that. Dow Loggins, it's a grab bag, and we don't do anything, in my mind, that it creates situations that we can take advantage of. And, you know, ultimately, simple things like run the ball effectively and then go bootleg off of it are, you know, and again, last night, there was a point in the third quarter when Trubisky has a naked bootleg, and I think it was their outside linebacker, you know, sacked him. Well, if Trubisky would have got rid of the ball quicker or even threw it out of bounds, it would have been, you know, a play that we could live with. But instead, getting sacked and putting us behind the sticks, those are things he cannot do. So there was an awful lot of good stuff, but there was enough other head-scratching moments where you said, okay, we had four starts and a week off and a bye week for him to review and to, you know, understand more and more what he's seeing and how he has to be able to, you know, attack it. And it's almost like there's, you know, one step forward, two steps back with this kid. And it's, again, it's frustrating, but more importantly, where are we going, you know, with the football team? Your point when we on the second segment, you know, this was a game you had to win if you wanted to say we are going to be viable in the second half. At 3-6, you're dead in the water. And you know what? John Fox, this whole catastrophe started when they decided Mike Glennon was going to be the starting quarterback in May. So you can go all the way back there. Forget the pylon. Forget all the other nonsense. The comic book started back in May when this genius said, Mike Glennon, is our starter, when everybody on that football team knew it was a waiting catastrophe.
There is some sort of noise coming out of the conference room. It sounds like an animal in there ranting and raving. Is there any chance OB is still in there?
He was pretty incensed. And I'll tell you why. You know, he lives in Palatine, and he said he went to the diner, and everybody said, hey, what do you think? And he's like, oh, yeah, we're going to win. We're going to kill him. We're going to kill him. He said he can't go back to Palatine ever. So Kaz and I had to get a truck and go get his stuff at 3 a.m. this morning and move him out of Palatine. He can never go back.
That's what's – I hope Fox and the Bears are listening. You're costing people their homes.
I feel bad for him. You know, OB has been in Palatine for 50 years. He's been banned for life and a day now.
That's how serious this is, people. Yeah. Hey, before you go, I got a couple of texts from people who said, ask Camp about Wile E. Coyote.
I made the comment last night, you know, John Fox is such a clueless person that, you know, it reminds me of a cartoon where Wile E. Coyote smells gas. He's in a dark room and he smells gas, so he lights his lighter to see what the smell.
Boom!
There you go.
It's Dan Hampton. We'll do the Lions. Lions are next, right? Yeah, the Lions. Yes. Yeah, we'll talk about that. They're coming off that juggernaut called the Cleveland Browns, so they should be ready. It's 7:31. Thank you, Amp. The Hall of Famer brought to you by ChevyDriveChicago.com.
The Steve Cochran Show.
When he's here at his desk and when he's abroad on these trips, he's trying to make better on behalf of everyone.
And you think name calling is helpful?
I know you are, but what am I?
Calling somebody short and fat?
I think that that was the president just responding the way he does to somebody who insulted him first.
I know you are, but what am I?
But I look at the full context of his entire trip and everything that he's trying to do. I think it's been an incredibly successful and inspiring trip for those who care about North Korea not being nuclearized.
I know you are, but what am I?
I know you are, but what am I? Infinity.
As far as we know, Pee Wee Herman was not part of the press tour. He wasn't in the gaggle, though he'd probably giggle when he heard the word gaggle. Ryan Nobles is on a good chunk of this trip. You were at least in Hawaii. And did you? Good morning, Ryan. How are you?
Good morning, Steve. How are you? I'm well.
Did you see the trip as a success? Or let me take that out of the way I put that. Do people feel the trip was a success, the folks you've talked to?
Well, you know, he's not done yet. He's got one more day in the Philippines. But I think there were some things that he accomplished. I think there were some areas where he fell short. It depends on what your view of success is, I guess, in any of these respects. But there were certainly some opportunities that he had that he didn't fully take advantage of. The best example being that he meeting with both the Chinese and Philippines leaders and not pressing them on human rights, I think was a pretty big error, one that John McCain pointed out this week. But, you know, I think they probably felt like they made some progress when it comes to economic deals and trade policy. And, you know, I think from the president's perspective and his supporters' perspective, the idea that he would go to the Korean Assembly and talk a hard line against North Korea, they would view as a success. Maybe some foreign policy experts view it differently. So there weren't huge stumbles where he, you know, made a fool of himself. But I don't know if they can completely look at this as a victory. I certainly don't know. And I think this is probably part of the problem with this White House is they always go down this road of that they try and put every single thing he does in the same class as Abraham Lincoln. When Kellyanne Conway calls the trip inspirational, I think that's probably a bridge too far.
Well, and on top of that, Kellyanne Conway is completely – this me, not you. Kellyanne Conway is useless, as most of the president's spokespeople are. It's the old Cliff Clavin thing. Hey, Cliff, what color is the sky in your world? We're watching the same video. We're seeing the same stuff. And for Kellyanne Conway to come out and say anybody who is charged – and proven to be guilty of the things that Roy Moore is accused of, isn't fit for office. Well, we know the president of the United States said he committed those acts in his own words. So she's talking about his guy. And then this, that's just how he talks when people attack him first. What are we, seven? So I know we're not supposed to be outraged anymore. Frankly, we shouldn't be outraged anymore at the outrageousness of the behavior of the president. But it still doesn't mean you shouldn't demand that the president of the United States act like a friggin' grown-up.
Yeah, and, you know, I actually watched Saturday Night Live this week, and they did a weekend update, and they played the tweet, or they showed the tweet, and, you know, Michael Che from Saturday Night Live actually stopped and said, well, that's actually pretty funny. Well, it may have been funny, his response to Kim Jong-un, but is that necessarily the role that you want your president to have, where he can get in a good barb on social media? I mean, does that help the process at all? And I think there's probably an argument against that altogether. But, I mean, when you have to look at the president's week in totality, Steve, you know, I think that he's coming back to the United States, you know, on very a very unstable situation here. You know, while he was gone, you had the elections in Virginia and New Jersey and across the country, which was just really a stunning repudiation of him and his administration. You've got this whole situation with Roy Moore, which is very, very uncomfortable for him and his administration, as you point out. And then you have kind of the reviews from the trip itself, which are mixed at best. And he comes back to a situation where they really need to get some sort of tax reform done before the end of the year, or he's going to have a whole year with almost zero legislative accomplishment. So, you know, they can tout all these different layers of accomplishment on this trip, but the fact remains when he gets back here, they've got a ton of work to do and a lot to respond to while he was gone.
Andrea, say hi to our friend Ryan.
Good morning, Ryan. Do you see, or is it being, I guess, received or perceived that because Donald Trump didn't have a formal meeting with Vladimir Putin, that part of the trip was a failure?
Well, I think the whole interaction with Putin in general is something that's going to come back to haunt the president, right? So they did have this kind of 5-minute brief conversation when they were on the way to that class photo. And at one point, the president told the press that he asked Putin specifically if he had intervened in the American election, and Putin told him no. And the way he presented it initially was, we've got nothing to worry about. Vladimir Putin told me it was okay, so we're okay. And then he kind of spun it back the other way when he got on board Air Force One, and I would assume had talked to some of his advisors, and then he said, no, trust me. I believe with the assessment of the intelligence community. And then his own CIA director and the CIA itself came out and said, no, we definitively believe that Russia was involved in this election interference. And so the question you have is, where is he when it comes to Vladimir Putin? Is
he doesn't know.
A tough guy that stands up to him? Does he just believe whatever this former KGB colonel says whenever he says it? So I think that's probably the best example of this kind of uneven results of these trips. He certainly didn't stand up to him. They certainly didn't have any kind of substantive conversations. And, you know, the argument the president makes over and over again is, if I can have a good relationship with Putin, that's going to make the situation in North Korea better. It's going to make the situation in China better. It's going to make the situation better in Eastern Europe. But there's no evidence that that's taking place. There's evidence that Vladimir Putin tells the president what he wants to hear, but that doesn't necessarily mean any progress is being made.
Well, a couple things here. James Clapper, Jim Comey, and John Brennan have a collective 100-plus years of serving the American public as civil servants and managers of our security intelligence architecture at the highest level. He called them hacks this weekend on Veterans Day. Secondarily, we've reached a new level of lying here. And let me just take a second to give you my take on this. When Donald Trump stands up and says, I asked Putin, and Putin said, no, I can't keep asking him, and I believe him. Putin's office comes out 2 hours later and says, no, we never talked about that.
Right.
Why is he lying about bringing it up? Duterte, this creep from the Philippines, he says, I asked Duterte briefly. And his people said, he asked Duterte briefly about human rights. Duterte's office said, no, never came up. There's a level of pathology to the lying here that goes even beyond politics. But anyway, that and Roy Moore, when we continue, it's a happy little Monday. And our friend Ryan Nobles from CNN is here. You should follow Ryan on social media. It's good. Plus, he knows everybody. He's covering all the stuff. He's got access. He's got lanyards. Ryan's got a whole closet full of lanyards. That's how you know you've made it, when you got a lot of lanyards. It's a minute before 6, 7, 8, clear of the two. Okay, it's 7:49. Here's your traffic with Mary, and then more with Ryan Nobles. Ryan Nobles is with us from CNN. Ryan, let's talk about this. Oh, are you being attacked by your children right now?
No, I'm not being attacked by my children. I'm all right. Let me just scoot to a different room here. Sorry about that.
Oh, it's fine. I thought you were under attack by adorable children.
I never know what you can hear in the background. So
No worries. You know how I love kids. So Ryan Noble's here from CNN. All right, let's talk about this Roy Moore thing for a second. The argument that's being made by that dope Steve Bannon at Breitbart is how partisan this is and what a Democrat fix this is. This is the most blatant partisan move you can make. In other words, if you firmly believe you're right because you're Republican, or you firmly believe you're right because you're Democrat, you're being partisan. And the notion that a 30 sources plus piece in the Washington Post is fake because it's not what you agree with, read the story. The Washington Post is a team of people, including CNN, the New York Times, and others, that exposed Hillary Clinton's emails. You wouldn't know about the Hillary Clinton story if not for good journalism.
And why is it that Republicans herald the reporting of the New York Times and the Washington Post when we're talking about Harvey Weinstein or Kevin Spacey or Louis C.K., all these liberals that have now been accused of sexual harassment? I think it's fair to say that the mainstream media has painted with a very broad brush when it comes to this. If you're a creep and you abuse someone sexually, the media is going to bring that to light. At least they are now. Maybe they turned a blind eye for a really long time, but that's not the case anymore. And in this case with Roy Moore, it's not as if the media has not attempted to give him an opportunity to explain himself.
Exactly.
And in every instance where he has attempted to explain himself, he's dug an even deeper hole. Even when the venues that he's gone to explain himself are friendly media, the interview that he did on the radio with Sean Hannity was, I think, the most damning indictment of his role in this whole thing.
Yep.
He essentially admitted to the fact that he dated teenage girls. And so every single explanation that he has contradicts the explanation that he had before. The idea that they're using as an excuse that a victim can't wait 40 years to come forward is completely laughable and is incorrect and is wrong, especially if you know anything about the psychology of sexual abuse victims.
And anything about this story.
Exactly, and anything about this story in particular. The idea that a 14-year-old girl in the state of Alabama could come forward and accuse an assistant district attorney of molesting her in that environment and be believed is laughable. I mean, look at what is happening to this woman now, 40 years after the fact, when you have the Washington Post and all these different media outlets backing her up. Her credibility is still being destroyed.
And the victim is precisely why women don't come forward. Right.
And her mother, too, said, yes, I left her with him. I thought I could trust him.
Yeah,
the victim. Everybody's not lying.
This is the move, trashing the victim and threatening to sue. This is Trump's move.
Right.
Trump promised he was going to sue the 12 or 13 women that accused him. Didn't do it. Mm-hmm. Roy Moore, he threatened to sue the Washington Post. Bring it on, Roy. Mm-hmm. He's not going to sue because he's going to have to then declare his behavior.
Right. We get into this situation where, I'm not one of these people who's a member of the mainstream media that completely ignores the sins of my institutions, right? So you've got Rolling Stone, you've got the Duke rape case, you've got these examples of where there have been instances where men or a group of men have been incorrectly accused of something. But we need to look at all these situations individually. And you cannot look at the in-depth and extensive reporting of the Washington Post and compare that to what Rolling Stone did at the University of Virginia. These are two completely different cases. And we as adults and as intelligent human beings need to take a step back and say, okay, this report seems to have a heck of a lot more to it than that Rolling Stone report, which read like a telenovela. This is a whole different situation, and Republicans can't ignore it anymore. And you saw the initial outcry was, well, if he did something wrong, then he needs to step down or step away. Now you're starting to see that change quite a bit. And I do have to give credit to Mark Short, who is the director of legislative affairs out of the White House. This is the guy who deals with Congress. And he was on Meet the Press this weekend, and he said definitively that pedophilia is not something that is worth saving a Senate seat over. And there are some Republicans who are making the argument, which is an atrocious argument, that, well, we just need to get him seated because we need his vote, which I don't understand how you can look yourself in the mirror and make that argument. So it's going to be interesting to see how this whole thing plays out. And the question I have is, not to drone on about this, what do the voters of Alabama think? And is there a possibility, and I think there still is a possibility, that given all this evidence, that the voters of Alabama will still think that Roy Moore is the best man for the job.
Right.
And then I think the Mitch McConnell and Senate leadership is going to have a very difficult decision in the middle of December.
There is no due process in politics. There's due process when you are criminally charged with something. Roy Moore's lucky he hasn't been yet, and he probably won't be because of the timing of all of this. But he's not entitled to due process. There's no way you're going to be to go back and prove this stuff up, but it's on him. Because he wants a political job, it's on him to prove that this didn't happen to the best of his ability, and not just by being louder.
And I would even argue, Steve, that the Washington Post has given him an opportunity at due process.
Yep.
It's not as if the Post went out there and just did some sort of hatchet job. They gave him and his advisors multiple opportunities to explain all of the evidence that they'd lined up. Explain, did you know her? Did you bring her into this room? Did you do this? Did you do that? And he's not been able to give a cogent explanation for any of that. So the idea that somehow these allegations haven't really been proven, I think is wrong. I mean, I think that if this were put into a court of law, he'd probably have the book thrown at him. But it may not turn out that way. But I think even in this instance, he's been given the opportunity for due process, and he has not been able to explain himself. And I think that's one of the big problems here.
Thank you, Ryan. Go bother your children, and thank you for being on, man. I appreciate it.
Always my pleasure, guys. Have a great week.
Ryan Nobles from CNN.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood, you know I love you more. Yeah, well, kiss me good.
It's Dean Richards live at Channel 9. Hi, Dean.
Steve, good morning to you.
Fine, thank you. How are you?
So here's the thing. Yesterday we do my Sunday show, Tree Time.
Yeah, sure.
Christmas Creations.
Of course.
We had a great time, really fun.
Absolutely.
A packed standing room.
Plaqued. It was so packed it was plaqued.
It was plaqued out there. Here's what I'm hearing all morning. Oh, I love you guys on Steve's show.
That's a good point.
Which is a compliment. Which is a compliment. But
no, nothing about TV?
No, some people watch the number one TV morning show also.
But more people were concerned about this show?
But people were super complimentary. They love our little segment that we do here.
Yeah, well, Andre and Dave get this all the time. You know, Andre and Dave are all over TV, and they go up and they go, tell me, what are Dean and Steve really like?
All the time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all I hear.
Even more so than, hey, we're Skilling.
Mm-hmm. Because
they think Tom Skilling comes out with you on every shoot.
And I always flash back to that scene from The Birdcage where Nathan Lane says, bitter, disillusioned, how am I supposed to feel?
Betrayed, bewildered.
Yes, that's right. How was your weekend?
People, it was fantastic.
It was busy, right? Weren't you in L.A.?
I was in L.A. for Friday and Saturday. And
who'd you see? Who'd you see in L.A.? What big stars were you hanging around with?
I saw the new movie called The Star, which is an animated version of the Nativity story. You know the Nativity story, don't you?
I don't think that needed a remake, did it?
Birth of Jesus?
Are they remaking the birth of Jesus?
Manger, Bethlehem, Mary, Joseph.
Well, I'm pretty sure I know how that ended.
And who knew? I don't remember this in reading the Bible. Apparently, the animals could talk and make wisecracking jokes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, they were the three wisecracking men. They weren't the three wise men.
Well, it was really more the animals.
Oh,
had
animals.
More. Movie is really told more from the animals' perspective.
Got it.
Oprah Winfrey does the voice of a camel.
Who knew Oprah was
you
so
get a
big
hump
back
and
then.
You get a hump and you get a hump.
Tyler Perry is a camel, and Tracy Morgan is a camel.
When the other camels were talking to Tyler Perry's camel, did they have to refer to it as Tyler Perry's camel?
Hey, look at Tyler Perry's hump. No, I mean Tyler Perry's hump.
And then you talked to Patricia Heaton as well?
We talked with Patricia Heaton.
What'd you talk to her about?
We talked about the movie. We talked about Everybody Loves Raymond. Mm-hmm. We talked about her, you know, her current show, The Middle, is wrapping up for good, 9 seasons. So we talked about all that. I'd love to play some audio of that for you.
Didn't work out, though.
We were having some technical issues.
No worries. But Patricia Heaton, I've interviewed her a few times in person, and she's delightful.
She is absolutely very, very delightful.
Yeah, she's delightful.
One of the funniest things, if you can imagine, if we were not having technical issues, mm-hmm. and I'm Patricia Heaton, mm-hmm. Saying... You know what? If you're a zombie and a werewolf lover, there are enough movies for you.
You know what? She's not wrong.
How about a movie about the nativity? There aren't very many movies about the nativity. And I'm a werewolf lover myself, said Picture Sheet.
I'm just a little concerned about remaking it. Did we need to remake it? I don't know.
It's a different telling.
First Murder on the Orient Express, now the Nativity Story.
It's a different version.
Is a little drummer boy in it?
The little drummer boy.
They didn't
boy?
Cast the little drummer boy.
They had union issues.
Yeah.
Union issues.
Actually, the little drummer boy is played by Ringo. Ringo Starr, because he is, in fact, a little drummer boy. Yeah.
They have a rockin' soundtrack.
Hmm.
The way
I'm not saying I won't see it. I'm just
Mariah Carey does the theme song.
I probably won't see it then. No, she's delightful as well.
Kirk Franklin, Kelsey Ballerini.
Oh, I love Kirk Franklin. He's nuts, but I love him.
Who else is on the sound? Kirk Franklin does an amazing gospel version of We Three Kings. You'll love.
Can I get a witness?
Soundtrack is great. The movie is it's the Nativity. What critic's going to trash the Nativity?
How about that? Right. I'd like to be the critic that says, not believable.
Yeah, performances were great, but the storyline, not.
All right, Carrie Underwood fell down, got a big boo-boo. We got to figure out what happened here. Jimmy Buffett musical is coming to town, or is it already here?
It's already here.
Oh, it is here.
Yeah.
Gal Gadot is saying she's not going to do Wonder Woman 2 unless, Shaq threw a big party for his daughter.
$1 million worth of party for his daughter.
How old is she?
16.
Okay, got it.
And also, when we come back, Dean, the text question of the day, texters are going to pick this up again. The text question of the day is, why my neighbor sucks? Why do you have a bad neighbor? Your bad neighbor stories at 312-981-7200, texters.
What if I have nice neighbors, though?
That'd be a different day. More with Dean in a second. Sucking up to his neighbors won't be allowed, but we'll go to Mary here with your traffic trouble spots. What's happening?
You'll be calling his name.
Sounds like the joint's jumping over at Channel 9.
Trying to resolve the audio issue.
Ah, good. We don't need it right now. Hey, Annabelle Laval's live in Puerto Rico. I know you guys are making a big deal out of it, as you should, at Channel 9, and she'll be on with us tomorrow.
Why not today?
We were too busy waiting for your Patricia Heaton audio to come through to give her a segment. All right, what happened to Carrie Underwood?
She fell down in her house. She was going up the stairs in her home in Nashville, and she fell, and she broke her arm.
Yikes.
Broke her arm. She was taken to a local hospital. Her wrist, sorry. She broke her wrist. Taken
she going
to
be okay, little Tommy?
Taken to a local hospital, little Stevie, where she was treated for cuts and scrapes. And
How hard did she fall?
Well, hard enough to break her wrist.
We need to make up more to this story. There's something else going on here.
You know, her husband's a former hockey player, NHL player.
Did he have a flashback or
maybe
something?
Maybe she needs to wear, some pads or something when she's in a protection. She tweeted out, thanks so much for the well wishes.
Jimmy Fallon's falling all the time. Do you think he tripped her?
Maybe.
They probably don't live together.
Maybe hiding in the bushes for a prank, a Fallon-esque kind of prank.
All right, so the Jimmy Buffett musical over the weekend, celebrity showed up.
It's called Escape to Margaritaville.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of these jukebox musicals because it's, all the music from a particular artist, and in this case, it's Jimmy Buffett music. And Jimmy Buffett he doesn't perform in the show at all, except on Saturday when they finish the show. And the cast was taking its bows at the end, and out walks Jimmy Buffett.
Wow. Cool.
And, the place goes wild, and he starts singing that Margaritaville song. And
if you like pina coladas.
It's a different drink song.
Oh, that's not it?
Completely different drink song.
Wasting away, get that one.
You're right.
Oh, that one, okay.
And then he introduces, he says, you never know who's going to show up in Margaritaville. and calls out a friend of his, as he calls him, Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Oh, no.
So, obviously, they're tight.
So, they're apparently very, very, very close. Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Let's bring
Miranda.
Him out right now. Lin-Manuel Miranda.
It was manual, like a car manual. Here's Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Oh, I shouldn't pick him. Buffett is really a good guy.
He's a good guy. He's a good guy. And you know what? He actually is friends with Lin-Manuel. He's seen Hamilton about six times on Broadway.
Wow.
One of those times sitting in the technical production booth while they were doing the show, just so he could see how technically it was all put together. They don't let just anybody.
Why don't they just give him the manual?
Sit in the booth. Well, he got the manual because Lin-Manuel came out on stage and they all sang Margaritaville together.
Fantastic.
So that's going to be here. This show is headed to Broadway. It's one of these pre-Broadway previews.
Yeah.
And it's going to be here till early December, and then it's going to move on to Broadway. It's going to, you know, work out a few more little kinks and then go to Broadway.
Shaq threw a $1 million Sweet 16 party. This is probably like Andrea, probably like one of your parents threw for you. $1 million.
Oh, my big fat Greek birthday party.
Greek parents, you know, for, you know, milestone birthdays like
oh
that.
Oh, my God.
Like Sweet 16. Like, what did you do for your Sweet 16?
Sweet 16 had a birthday party at home. And for my 21st, they threw me one, too.
Right. Mm. Yeah. I remember they threw you a big party on the rooftop of a famous Greek town
restaurant. As well.
I don't remember which birthday
remember
that was, but that was
30?
That was huge.
That was 30, so
yeah, that was your
year.
29th
one,
yeah.
That was
last
year, guys.
Yeah, that was last year.
It was fun.
Seems like
yeah.
it was yesterday.
That was a great party. You should do that every year. Andrew.
I know. I'm going to do that, I think. I'm going to throw it myself now.
A little bit different for Shaquille O'Neal's daughter, Mimi. She turned...
Mimi.
She turned 16, and he hired a rapper, YG, mm-hmm. To come and perform, who performed 8 songs, including his 2 biggest hits, Steve.
What are you talking about? I know him.
You don't know YG.
I do. YG used to open for ING.
What's your favorite YG rap?
He used to open for LOL, didn't he?
Yes, he did. He did. Yes. And LMFAO couldn't make the gig.
Yeah. So YG performed 8 songs at the event, including his 2 biggest hits. Why You Always Hatin'?
Yep.
And Toot It and Boot It.
Toot It and Boot It. Toot It and Boot It. That's the only part I remember.
So he also rented out the rooftop of the...
Why You Always Hatin'. What? I'm sorry?
The W Hotel in Hollywood. He rents out the rooftop.
Right.
And then...
Was he YG in up there?
As a present, gave his daughter a brand new Mercedes-Benz automobile.
Well, that won't screw her up. Every 16-year-old ought to get that.
Yeah. So happy Sweet 16, honey.
I think Warren Buffett said it best when it comes to giving money to your kids. He said, just because they could be secure for the rest of their life, and I could give them all this money, doesn't mean I should. Dun, dun, dun.
It's true.
Yeah, you got to earn a living. Mm-hmm. You got to learn how to earn a living for
the
yourself.
The profound moment of the show. Toot it and boot it.
I mean, you're just giving money. Next thing you know, you're running for governor in Illinois. Oh, what happened there? All right, so this Gal Gadot story. Now, you saw Wonder Woman.
I absolutely loved Wonder Woman.
Is that your favorite movie of the year?
I think it was, Dean. I really do. I just, I don't...
Besides the Julianne Moore movie.
Oh, yeah, right, exactly. Right, That's right, a close right. second. But right. I just thought Wonder Woman was, it was a good movie. It was
so
well put
together.
You'd
be excited about Wonder Woman 2.
Absolutely, I would. It really, it was a female empowering movie. I thought it was fantastic. I think all little girls should go see it.
Dean has bad news.
Well, you know, director Brett Ratner is involved in the whole Wonder Woman, you know, business side. His company co-financed the movie. And Brett Ratner is one of the people that is a target of numerous sexual harassment.
Well, he lost the Oscars gig a few years ago because of this stuff.
Huge. I mean, it's multiple complaints against him for inappropriate behavior. Gal Gadot, God bless her, is saying...
It's not Godot?
Well, I've heard her say Gadot, and I've heard her say Godot.
Well, pick one.
So I alternated each time I say.
All right.
She says that she's not going to be part of the sequel if Ratner's company is involved with it.
Wow.
She wants Warner Brothers Pictures to buy him out of the deal and get rid of him. But if he is involved, she will not be involved.
You know, good for her, though, for taking a stand.
Yeah.
Now, the studio could take a stand and say, okay, we're going to pay you half of what we paid you.
Right.
Because we're going to use part of that money to buy him out. But maybe they'll just do the right thing.
Yeah. I hope so.
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting story because, you know, I presume that she's already signed a contract to do. Normally, when they sign on for something like this, they also sign up to do the original and then two sequels. They usually come in packs of three, so she's probably already signed on for all of this. But
well, I can guarantee you she doesn't have a clause in her deal that says she gets to choose who the director is.
Right.
But there's no upside to taking an actress or an actor or a disc jockey or a talk show host and say, okay, you hate the people you work for, now go have a good show. Go do a good movie.
Right.
It's not going to work that way.
Linda Carter tweeted that she's very brave and she hopes that she gets her way.
No. Did she tweet it about Gal Gadot or Gal Gadot?
About both.
Okay.
I presume that she is willing to walk away from the money.
She must be.
If and that's how strongly she feels about it.
Good for her.
God, as I said, God bless her. That's nothing talks louder in Hollywood than green and elsewhere than the greenback dollars.
Texters from the 847 listening to Dean and Steve while working out is dangerous. They're very funny. I almost dropped a bar on my chest.
That sounds like code for something.
That is so sweet that you almost injured yourself in the gym over
Thank
us.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
That's very nice. Thanks, man. Well, manner, man. All right, buddy. I'll see you. All right, 8:33. Paul Conrad, speaking of Channel 9, will be on in about an hour. And we have to bring up something to Paul Conrad called the Friendsgiving.
Yeah, I heard about this morning.
The Friendsgiving. One of our people here had a Friendsgiving this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Big spread, too, I hear. Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is the thing now.
Yeah, my son was going away.
Very popular. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to be with their family. They just want to be with their friends.
But it was this weekend, so they could be with their family.
Oh, they're
next
doing
weekend.
Both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanksgiving's next week. You know that? It's a week from Thursday.
You get to eat twice. I like this idea.
A week from Thursday?
I know, right?
I got to get my shopping done. It's 8:34. What do you guys want for Thanksgiving? Well, think
How
about it.
How much time
it.
Do we have?
Think about it. At 8:34, we'll come back with a big story next. And Mike Ditka. You guys, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Mike. Quite a popular coach.
I've heard of him.
Coach Ditka will be on talking about what happened with the Bears yesterday on 720 WGN. Big story next.
Ditka.
Well, it's coming right now, right for us at 22,000 miles an hour.
Ditka.
Not a soul on earth can hide from
The Steve Cochran Show now welcomes Mike Ditka.
I'm happy for Steve, and I told him I'm proud of him. I tell you what.
The best Bears conversation is right now on 720 WGN.
Missed opportunity yesterday for the Chicago Bears. Well, you know, there's only 16 of them, so they're all missed opportunities when you lose. But yesterday just felt worse because it was the Packers. And the Packers are beat up. Coach Ditka joins us now. Who's he brought to us by, Dave?
He's brought to us by Andre Darlis.
Andre Darlis?
Yes. Apparently, yes. Because...
All right. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Andre, for sponsoring Coach
Absolutely.
Ditka.
Love Coach.
Coach, good morning.
Morning. How are you?
We're doing fine. Doing fine. So, you know, like I said, disappointing yesterday, missed opportunity. But your take on the Bears-Packers?
Well, you play to win the game. You know, when you're not winning, and you got the biggest rivalry in the history of probably football, Green Bay Packers, Chicago Bears. You got them at home. It's a game you want to win. There's no question about it. They didn't do enough to win the game. I mean, there's a lot of inconsistency, and you got to be consistent. You've got to be able to run the ball. You got to be able to play defense, and you got to be able to play special teams. If those three things happen, the rest will work out because you'll be able to get play action passes off the running game. But right now they're struggling a little bit. But that, you know, it's not over. There's light at the end of the tunnel.
Give me a little coach's perspective here, because you didn't play in an era where you had the bye week, and the bye week hasn't always been in there, but it is now. So if you get a bye week, how does a team come back flat?
Well, you know, I don't know that. You know, the players are rested. There's no question about it. What we did is we came in and we met on the. Tuesday, Monday, we watched the films, and we didn't bring them back till Thursday. We practiced Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Then the game Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday off, came back and practiced Wednesday for the next game. That's the way we did it. And I learned it from Coach Landry. That's what he did. It's, you know, the players got it. It gets monotonous. It really does. It gets tough mentally and physically on the players and the coaches. And you got to have a little bit of time off. And if you can get the bye week, gives you a chance to regroup a little bit. Now, if you don't regroup, it doesn't do you any good.
So tell me if this has happened to you. You get a week off, you feel like you're prepped, you feel like the guys are rested, you feel like we're going to have a good game. You come out and you just lay an egg. You must have had those as a coaching experience one place or another.
Well, Well, you know I've had them. So, you know, you know I've had them. You know, it's just hard to put your finger on it. You know, it's not, nobody's trying not to do the job. Nobody's trying not to play good. No one's trying not to be consistent. Sometimes it happens. You know, football, people make it a little bit more complex than it is. Now, I understand now what they're doing formation-wise, and the matchups they get right now are a little different than it was when I was coaching. But still, you know, you got to challenge your players. It's an individual game. If your job is to cover man-to-man, then you got to cover man-to-man. It's got to be a pride thing. It's got to be something inside the individual. He's not going to beat me. And the same with the offensive lineman. You got to move the guy in front of you. You got to move him. You got to create a hole. You know, I don't know any other way to explain it. You know, I think football, as much of a team sport as it is, it comes down to the individual performances. If you don't get those, you're going to have a hard time having success as a team.
Obviously, Mike, the big story was the replay challenge, which ended up backfiring on the Bears yesterday with the touchback ruled after they looked at the video. Do you like the way replay is being used in the NFL? I mean, I know Steve mentioned, I mean, you weren't in an era where there was a bye week in the regular season, and you also have seen video, the use of replay, you know, over the years become a big part of this game.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of wrongs. I mean, yeah, mm-hmm. You know, the officials are only human. They can miss something. I've seen it right a lot of wrongs. And, you know, when I played, there was no such thing, so it didn't matter. If you got a bad call, you got a bad call. That's just the way it was. You had to overcome it. But, you know, I don't know. The replay thing now, it's pretty interesting, but I'm not a big fan of it, really. I understand that you want to right a wrong if it's wrong. But sometimes they look at it and they don't even write the wrong that's wrong. So, it's hard for me to get excited about it, but you know, again, they put it in for the good of the game. They, you know, if you can correct a mistake, correct it. That's what they did it for.
The challenge flag, would you ever have taken it and just thrown it at an official?
Who, me?
Yeah. Good answer.
I mean, good answer. General, so I love the officials. They were always my friends. I would never do
that. Yeah, of course you would.
It's frustrating, and people don't know. You know, it's John's coaching. This is what he does, and he's hired to win. There's a lot of frustration that comes in when you don't get the results you anticipate. And right now, they're not getting the results they anticipate. And, you know, it's hard to put your finger on it. Why? I mean, I watched the whole game. Well, I watched most of the game because I was watching the red zone. But I watched most of it, and it's just hard to put your finger on it. But it comes down to execution. Can you execute the play called under pressure? Now, the other team, you got to understand, they're trying to stop you from executing. So, you know, it becomes a struggle there, and you got to be able to out-execute them once in a while. And they didn't do enough of that yesterday, that's all.
It's a bad division, with the Vikings being a surprise leader and sort of running away with it, which could end at any moment. I'd remind you, Bears fans, the Vikings, I think, were 5-0 last year and then lost something like 9 of their last 11. So it ain't over till the fat lady orders more nachos. That's the old saying, I think. Mm-hmm. Hey, Coach, before we let you go, Hamp told us a story the other day, which I need you to confirm or deny. Preseason game in the late 80s, Packers, Bears, and Hamp tells Mongo, I never tailgated. Let's go outside. Let's go outside and give the fans a hard time. They shower up. They hustle outside. Apparently spent too long. The team bus rolls up, honks the horn, and you leaned out and you gave him a one-handed salute. I'll just leave it at that. Any of that true?
Oh, it might have been. I don't know. You know, my memory is not what it used to be. But, I mean, there's a time and place for everything. And I understand our guys were fun-loving guys, and they had a lot of fun. But, you know, wait till you get home. Wait till you bus is home. Wait till you get on a plane. Wait till you get back to Chicago. You can do all the partying you want to, not in the parking lot.
They had to drive back with fans, too, Coach.
Yeah, they rode back with a couple of people from Lake Forest. They're lucky they got a ride.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess they're lucky, I guess. Yeah, but the Bears, listen, when we were playing, you know, we could hardly do any wrong. Not that we won everything, but, I mean, the Bears were the big thing, and they still
sure.
are.
Sure,
Chicago
sure.
Bears, for Chicago sports, always will be, just like the Cubs are, just like the Bulls, the Blackhawks. Doesn't matter. If they win, lose, they're always going to have a fan base. I think the best in the country. So, they got the support behind them. They just got to get over a hump, you know, and whatever that hump is, whatever, a bump in the road, they got to get over it somehow and regain some confidence.
If Hamp and Mongo were hitchhiking today, would you pick them up?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They probably have a case of beer with them. But yeah.
All right, Coach, all the best. Thank you. That's Coach Mike Ditka on the Steve Cochran Show. Here's Mary.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Woo! Woo! Ow!
Love that money.
It's our friend Elise Glink, thinkglink.com. Elise, hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. Did you have a good weekend?
Yeah, busy but good. What about you?
Yeah, busy but good.
The text question of the day is, why my neighbor sucks? here's one from the 708. When my friends and I would play touch football on the street back in the day, there was a mean, grumpy old neighbor who'd try to run us over or run our ball over. It wouldn't have been so bad, except a lot of times we were still carrying it. Hey, Grumpy, don't run us down. So, so if you you got a neighbor you want to, trash?
No, I actually really like my neighbors.
Oh, good.
We pick
good,
up
good,
each
good.
Other's papers. We, trade holiday cookies. You know,
I had a good time this weekend. I just went around the neighborhood tackling people wearing earbuds and mowing.
Yeah, I understand that there's a lot of neighbor angst around leaf collection in other places in the country.
I had a Christmas tree light war with a guy across the street when the kids were little. It was kind of fun. You know, he'd do a new section, and come home, I had to do a new section. Eventually, both our houses burned down from too many lights.
Do you have your lights up?
Can you imagine the electrical bill at the end of that headache?
Ah, whatever, right? Yeah. Once a year. No, but I'm thinking about putting up the lights midweek this week. Let me tell you why.
Because it's going to be 55.
Because it's going to be 55, and there's a forecast for a potential storm on Saturday, which could be epic.
Yeah.
We're talking about 50-mile-an-hour winds, snow.
Plague, do it before then.
Plague of locusts. I mean,
no,
why?
I don't think the locusts are coming. Gonna...
And last year, you never even finished.
No, I didn't. I quit.
Because
I got two-thirds of the lights up and it got super
Halloween
cold.
I Halloween decorations up, so I don't know.
I wouldn't do the Halloween stuff now.
No, nah, it's a little late. But around the neighborhood, I'm seeing people string up their lights already. Yeah. They haven't turned them on at night. I think there's going to be some sort of a big collective flip of switch next week, but everybody's got their lights already strung.
All the wreaths. I know the lights parade is this Saturday downtown, but all the wreaths and the garland and the tree in Pioneer Court's already up.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we don't know why, Elise, but we usually have this beautiful Christmas tree in the lobby here at the Tribune Tower. Oh, yeah. And now we got a couple of lit bushes.
They're plants, I think.
Oh, they're not. Yeah, they're nice. They're nice.
They're plants with
what
sticks.
What is that thing?
Yeah. Plants with sticks coming out of the top.
Can't imagine why that is.
So, I mean, if somebody put up a giant menorah in the lobby, I wouldn't mind.
No.
It's totally fine.
It's nice.
Yeah. All right, 9:15. The tax bill that you and I discussed last week, which may or may not happen, is just filled with a whole lot of bad. I'm sure there's pieces of it that, if separated, could be positive. Yes, the entire tax code needs an overhaul. But what's this going to do to charities?
Well, for charities, what they're thinking is going to happen is that the standard deduction is going to nearly double to $12,200 for an individual, $24,500 for a married couple. And currently, you've got 30% of the population who pays taxes who itemizes on their federal income tax form.
Right.
Once you raise that level, the number of people who will itemize will drop from a third to just 5%. And you want to know who they are? They're all the really, 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 really rich people. So people give money to charity because they feel compelled to and they like it. But it also has been found through numerous studies that they are more generous because they get this deduction than if they haven't. And the charitable deduction has actually been in place for around 100 years. So for 100 years, we've had a deduction in this country if you've given to charity. And that goes away, and the fear, according to a study from the Lilly Family School of Philanthropy, the fear is that it's going to reduce charitable giving by anywhere from $5 billion to $13 billion a year annually. Now,
so we're talking about the charity deduction going away completely? In other words, give if you can. You're not getting a dime on your taxes either way?
Yeah, because if you're going to eliminate deductions so and get a higher standard deduction, the thinking is, okay, well, now you're getting a deduction of $24,000 per couple. So you'll have all that extra money in your pocket to give away if you want to or save for retirement or whatever it is you're supposed to be able to do with that extra money.
But are they changing the ability to deduct charitable contributions if you're still a generous giving person?
They're changing the mechanism of who qualifies.
Okay.
And so if you are going to basically, my understanding is that they are not going to completely get rid of the charitable deduction.
But they're de-incentivizing it.
But so few people will be able to qualify for it.
Okay.
So that's the real issue here is who is going to be able to itemize? And the answer is you got to make a ton of money and you got to give away a ton of money.
Right. So it comes down to the goodness of you. And it's not insulting anyone. We just know human nature, and the studies you mentioned will show the same thing. There will be less money given to charities.
Yeah, and that's really devastating for charities everywhere. And again, this is just part of that hypocrisy that it's a little bit hard to understand how these decisions are getting made. You know, this whole idea that, you know, we don't want to incentivize people to be charitable, and yet we don't want the federal government picking up those costs and expenses, it just makes you wonder, you know, just even with Greater Chicago Food Depository or, you know, any of the other wonderful charities we have in our own state, and then not only that, but of course nationwide, you wonder how that good work is going to continue. And don't forget, the good work is all about employing a lot of people in that industry as well. And so we've seen in our own state, once that we didn't have a budget for, 3 years, that most hard hit were the charities in the state of Illinois, and because they didn't get any money coming in from the state, they survived only on their charitable contributions, basically for the 3 years, and a lot of people lost their jobs.
Elise, what about the non-monetary charitable deductions that were allowed to make, either furniture donations, clothing, things of that sort, because that could take up a nice chunk too?
So deductions are deductions, right? So it's whether you give money or you give something that's valued as money, it's typically, you know, the same thing. So, for example, if you pack up a load of clothes and furniture from your house and you donate it to the Salvation Army, let's say, there is a mechanism in the tax code by which you estimate what the actual value of that clothing or that furniture is, and then you have a specific deduction that you can take. So it all gets translated back to dollars and cents, even if you're giving a sofa.
And the notion that every middle-class person will get a tax cut is proving each day as the analysis goes on not to be true. And a 708 texter says, I'm a single senior citizen, make under $50,000 a year. My itemized deductions are more than $12,000, so I am going to have to be paying more taxes. I have a medical deduction I'll no longer be able to take, and charitable deductions will go away as well. And that's just one example.
Yeah, so let me just, yes, and it's horrific what they're doing with the medical exemptions. We talked last week about the adoption credit. That's going away. Medical deductions, you can only take medical deductions if your medical expenses exceed the unreimbursed medical expenses exceed 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. Okay, that is already a really huge bar. So if somebody's making $50,000 a year and they've got, let's say, $11,000 or $12,000 out-of-pocket cash that they have to spend on prescriptions or doctor visits that aren't covered or out-of-network copays or whatever it is, normally they would be allowed to deduct that, but now they won't be able to. And that's going to be a really serious problem for people. Another thing I mentioned last week, we were talking a little bit about sort of why the mortgage industry and the whole real estate industry is up in arms. Well, there was a little known thing that I missed the first time, and I have to give kudos to my friend Ken Harney of the Washington Post Writers Group, who also publishes in the Chicago Tribune, for calling this one out. So under the current law, and we've talked about this for years, you can exclude from tax the first $250,000 of capital gains on a sale if you're single, and up to $500,000 if you're married, filing jointly. And you can do that every 2 years, every 24 months. Well, under the new rules, the 2 out of 5 standard vanishes. And instead, you have to live in and use the property as your main residence for 5 of the 8 preceding years. So this is aiming right at the heart of middle class and upper middle class families who, let's say you're forced to sell your house because of a job transfer, you've got a medical reason, or you're a first time buyer and now you've got kids and you've got to move out to a better school district. Okay, well, you're going to pay tax on any kind of money that you've made on that property. And they're not giving any grace period at all. And it's starting right away. Like, it goes into it, I think it starts November 2nd or December 31st is the other one of this year. They haven't even passed it yet, but it's almost going to be retroactive. And that is really going to kill a whole lot of people.
And it seems that the lessening of the tax brackets and the lowering of the number and whether it goes to 5 or 7, if it in fact it passes, while that all seems to be a good thing, it seems that it's being countered on the other side by what we're talking about, which is why people won't get that assumed originally $4,000 or $1,000 or whatever might trickle down, because it's going to be sucked up by what they no longer can take care of. So your best hope is what? Your tax bill will zero out and you won't end up paying any more for most people?
Your best hope is that you don't get have a huge penalty to pay. So yeah, your best hope is that it's minor pain or no pain at all, because it's just going to be equal. But on the other flip side, I think what's going to happen is the vast majority of people are going to be paying more. And this is also that super rich people and corporations can have a field day.
Yeah, it's just the thing, the idea that what didn't work in the 80s will work today is more than a little nuts. Last word from you.
Elise, real quick, I know Governor Rauner just signed a bill saying that if you give money to a school within a church, either a Catholic school, Greek school, obviously, that you will have a larger amount to deduct now from your tax bill. If this new bill goes into effect, the federal one, will that affect the state one, the state contribution?
It's really hard to know, but I would just talk. What I see is the problem there is not the deduction, but the lack of separation between church and state. Every single major issue in this country, every single major tenet that we hold so dear about separation of church and state, about why the founding fathers came to this country to begin with, was to keep this stuff separate. And when you start to remove or incentivize crossing that line over and over again, I can't tell you how strongly I feel that it destroys the fabric of what makes this country so absolutely amazing and different from every other country in the world. And whether it means that you'll be able to deduct $5 extra if you donate to your synagogue or your church or your mosque versus maintaining that separation and really enforcing it, I'm willing to pay the extra money in taxes just to have it be separate.
Yeah, look, that's not a knock on any religion. That's just the fact that America is great because we celebrate our differences, not force our similarities.
Right. We let everybody celebrate their own religions. If you're an atheist, great. If you're Islam, great. If it's Jewish, great. If it's, you know, evangelical Christian, fine. It just doesn't matter. We just have that separation so that people who just want it to be about the civics, right, about keeping it separate, that it stays separate. And by the separation, we respect all. And when you start to cross that line and you start to encode it in our tax codes, it just makes me sick.
We'll end on that happy note. Elise Glink will join us back later in the week. ThinkGlink.com. Go learn something about your money and go make some more at ThinkGlink.com. Thank you, Elise.
See you soon.
9:26. Back with a big story coming up on CLTV and 720 WGN. Yeah. It's been a long time since we heard this. This is the Paul Conrad love music. This is his ringtone. This is the music that he plays when he walks in the room.
Yeah.
This is what you insist on having underneath your weather forecast ratings.
Yeah.
So the ratings are so good.
Boy, they did some lighting in here that looks good.
You're in the weather center now?
Yeah.
Paul is on the program because we have several things to discuss here. But how's your Thanksgiving plans coming together?
They are really moving right along.
You haven't done anything?
Not yet, but okay. I believe there's some discussion that we may have turkey.
The mail order bride, Inga, is that her name?
Svetlana.
Svetlana, is she cooking?
No.
No.
I don't think so. It's been a while.
Not since you opened the box, huh?
Yeah. Things, you know.
Changed. Everything changed. Everything
and
changed.
And again, I say this every time. I feel badly, but I repeat it all the time. Starts off great, but once she started learning the English language.
Over.
What?
Over.
Poor thing.
But you do what you have to do.
Your son is how old now, your oldest?
14. He'll be 15 next month.
He's going to need his own turkey.
Yeah.
I bet he eats a little now,
yeah,
doesn't he?
A clean pair of socks wouldn't hurt him either. Something that didn't smell quite as strongly.
John DeCoste, musical director of the program, has spoken of that and speaks of that on stage occasionally. There's a certain thing that happens to a teenage boy that suddenly makes him smell like a nuclear waste facility.
Yeah. And they're oblivious.
Yeah. Can't smell it. Too close to it.
No. So. Nice kid.
He's a great kid.
But.
He just stinks. How are the other children?
They're good. Yeah, good. We were at that Northwestern football game Saturday night.
That was fun.
Yeah. And there were some gentlemen behind me who were using some swear words.
Would you call them Yahoos?
Maybe.
Drifters, ne'er-do-wells?
Drifters. Yeah, a couple ne'er-do-wells in there. And, you know, when you got your little kids with you, and these guys were really letting the
F-bombing it up.
Word, yeah. And I got to tell you, my 9-year-old boy and my 14-year-old son could not have gotten a bigger kick out of it also.
So at any point, do you turn around and give them the look?
No, I did not. Because I think they maybe had a drink or two in them.
Oh, yeah.
And they were in their 60s also.
Yeah, who needs it? Come on.
I'm sure they would just say, hey, listen, this is no place to bring your kid.
Yeah, but here's the thing. In all seriousness, when you're at a game, You can do whatever you want to do, but look around.
Right.
You know, have some sense. Have some decorum of your behavior.
I had my 6-year-old daughter right next to me.
If you were at the Jewel with your idiot friend, would you be F-bombing and right. S-bombing it up?
I was a little disappointed.
Yeah.
And there were a couple ladies in the row in front of me, but, you know, I guess we're in this time.
Several years ago, Paul told me a delightful story. This is his kids were much younger. Of traveling back from wherever you were traveling. And I believe you stopped at a restaurant in Indiana. And it was more of a mall, like a cafe squarish sort of area in a mall.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And on the edge of the table,
yeah,
people had written things. And one of your kids was just learning to read.
Right. And he says, hey, Dad. And then he reads off. The first word is the dirtiest. It's that four-letter one that begins in an F.
Yeah.
The second one is you.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, hey, Dad, look, blank you. And
showing him that he could read.
He showed it to me, and then he showed it to everybody. And I'm like, oh, no, this is not good. And he was loud, too. So
that's how I actually learned the F word as well. I was at a playground with my dad, and someone had written it in magic marker underneath the slide.
That's
and I said, Dad, what does this mean? He went, don't ever say that. He said, I said, I'm going to go home and ask Mom. He said, no, don't do that. So I didn't, and she yelled at him for letting me see it.
Well, if I remember your story right, Paul, I believe some people had recognized you previous
right.
to that.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hi, Paul. So nice to see you. Really enjoy the show.
Right. Your kids are great.
And the kids are going, F you, F you. And didn't you, like, pack them up, said, grab your food,
right.
run
said,
to the
yeah,
car?
Yeah, let's move. We'll move to another table. We're going to have to...
Well,
That's
listen...
good memory on your part, Steve.
There was a period of time... that you and I were the cool guys.
Yeah.
We were the young guys. We were the cool guys.
When was that?
That was up until about 20 minutes ago.
Okay, got it.
I was going to say mid-2015 to 18, somewhere in there.
Yeah, so we're not the cool guys anymore. We're more of the coaching advisor types now.
Consultants.
And I think we could help one of our own here in studio this morning.
All right.
Bennett Wakenight is here. Bennett, say hi to Paul Conrad.
Hello, Paul.
Bennett.
So I don't know if you've got folks like Bennett around. They're well-meaning millennials, but they really need to be steered in the right direction.
Right.
So Bennett had something this weekend which I think needs to be stopped legally. And what was that called, Bennett?
That was Friendsgiving.
A Friendsgiving. that's the right reaction. Friends. A Friendsgiving.
That's great.
That's awful.
Hey, what is a Friendsgiving, Bennett? Is it what I think it is?
Friendsgiving is pretty much exactly how it sounds, you know. bunch of friends get together, organize, act like adults, and make food and have a Thanksgiving, either pre or post Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right now?
So.
Yeah. It says, hey, real quick, this is an awful idea. In fact, it's such a bad idea, Pat Tomasulo's just walked in.
Where you were here in the audience.
Yeah,
from.
And he's saying this is a bad idea also.
Okay.
Oh, I didn't say anything. To what?
Yeah. Friendsgiving.
Oh, what a pain in the neck. Yeah, it's just more you got to do.
Yeah. Hi, Pat.
They say hi.
Hi, everybody. How are you? I can't. Paul will be the relay, the conduit, if you will.
Yeah, it's the Cochran Show, Pat.
He says it's the Cochran Show. This is really fun. We need to bring in a mime to turn this up a notch also.
So anyway, you're against the Friendsgiving?
I am against Friendsgiving.
Yes.
We've got, like, we've already got the month of Thanksgiving in place.
Yeah.
Let's not complicate it and make it.
And let's not call getting together with friends and eating special names. Come on.
No.
But the whole point is that the stigma against the regular Thanksgiving of drama, family, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. You don't have to worry about that at Friendsgiving. Mm-hmm. You can just enjoy the actual good
Are you
part.
Telling me that nobody at this get-together was annoying to you and you wanted them to
No,
leave?
See, that's the best part. You invite the people only you want to invite and get along with.
Is it the same food?
Same food.
Turkey.
So I got to say, Paul, if this continues, everybody's going to get along and we'll have no material.
Yeah. This is an awful idea.
Like Grumpy Old Men 3.
So can't you just get together on your own?
You know, we usually do, but I guess I was telling producer Mary Sandberg that, you know, we're not quite at the age of, like, doing formal dinner parties yet. Mm-hmm. So this is like the once a year where we all actually try to cook good things.
I think it's kind of nice.
There's do you dress up like pilgrims?
Yes, yes. Everyone has their respective hat.
It is well-intentioned and good-hearted.
Nice.
Paul used to host the Anchors Giving.
Yeah.
Where television anchors would get together and
complain about everything.
And complain about things, and everyone was given a mirror at the door so they could constantly take a look at how they look during the dinner.
We just call that Tuesday now. I mean, that's just an everyday thing now.
This is not a good thing when the younger generation comes along with good-hearted ideas that are kind and thoughtful.
No. Next thing you know, the world's going to be a better place to live.
That is not what
we need.
It's
not what I want.
It's not what we're here for.
No.
Not in the world of comedy.
So how many people, Bennett, did you get in around the table?
So we had 8 people total. So it was nice.
So you're telling me there are 8 people that you count as friends, 7.
Yes.
That you enjoy being around.
A few of them were probably faking, but, you know, I was there for the food, so it worked out. And we made a 23-pound turkey.
Wow.
And,
I think it's nice. I think it's a nice thing.
If Paul Conrad and I had a Friendsgiving, you know how many people would be there?
2.
Yep, he and I. Right. That would be it.
And one of you probably wouldn't show up.
Well, as long as I'm invited, I don't have to come.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, that's a beautiful idea. Let's just hope. It's all right if it spreads a little bit.
Yeah. Just, yeah, but let's not have it spread like a rash.
Now, here's the other thing. You and I don't have to worry about it, Steve. We are likely not going to be invited.
No, nobody's inviting us to a Friendsgiving.
Chances.
There's a thing called a Jackass Giving, which is coming up soon. Paul and I got embossed invitations.
We give each other candles, and it's really a sweet, sweet time.
It's a nice thing. Hey, thanks to you and your sidekick. That was Pat Tomasulo.
Hey, listen, my great pleasure. We're running in right now. I got to run into the other room and do the text message segment.
Don't even do it.
They're in my ear.
Oh, well, go run. Go run. Go do what you got to do.
No, I don't want to rush us. Because if I rush us, then it's not going to be meaningful. Next thing you know, I'm not going to be invited to the
No. You're at the Friendsgiving, the Thanksgiving, and you're always welcome here. Right. Thank you, buddy.
Hey, Steve, I just want to tell you how much I love you.
I love you, too.
I don't tell you that enough.
You really don't. Me. You just keep talking. Go ahead. Keep talking. All right. We're back after this on CLTV at 720 WGN.